Welcome to Florida.
That is the voice of best-selling author and award-winning environmental reporter Craig Pittman. My name is Chad Scott, and this is Welcome to Florida. You can find Craig on Facebook and Twitter at Craig Times and all of his books. Hey, Christmas, not too far around the corner. Manatee Insanity, Paving Paradise, Cattail, Florida. Oh, Florida. They make great Christmas presents, don't they, Craig?
Oh, you bet. And it's been a scandal, too.
Absolutely. Great stuff there. Today, we're going to talk about television with an old friend of yours.
Yes. Florida has been depicted in many ways on TV. One of my favorite Florida TV stories is a very, very early show called Everglades that came out in like 1961.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about a game warden patrolling for criminals in the Everglades. And the technical advisor on the show is a guy named Sigby Walker, who was a former game warden, who, unbeknownst to the producers, was at the time the biggest moonshiner in the area. So the real lawmen were actually trying to catch this guy same time he was advising them on. Yeah.
Great story. One thing I didn't know that came up in an earlier episode, our episode about the NASA love triangle, was that I Dream of Jeannie was filmed in, or was set in Florida. I don't know that it was filmed in Florida.
Cocoa Beach,
I was not aware of that because I've never seen that show. For me, you know, when I think of Florida on TV, and obviously we'll get into this in greater depth with Eric, but it's got to be Miami Vice and Golden Girls, right? Where you start, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, in Miami Vice, the great thing about Miami Vice is it all got started because one of the producers, Anthony Yerkovich, read in a Wall Street Journal story that I think was something like 1% of all undeclared income in America was going through Miami. And he thought, oh, my God, that's a huge, huge amount for one city. And so he pitched the idea of this TV show with, you know, sort of a rock music video vibe to it and the cops dressing up. So it became so popular that people who were generating that unreported income started investing in making its dreams come true. So, you know, they were going into these really rundown areas of Miami Beach and make them look good for the TV show. Well, then people would actually come in and invest and turn it into what we see it as today, this real glitzy, you know, South Beach look that all came out of a lie about Florida that came true.
Yeah. A couple for me that I'll give you. And again, I was born and raised in Wisconsin. I'm 45 now, so I was born in 75. So my big TV watching years were the 80s. And it's one of the reasons, one of the first ways I fell in love with Florida was ABC College Football, Keith Jackson. This would be, you know, 1990, 91, 92, when Florida State and Miami were all so good. And I remember distinctly, it would be late October, November in Wisconsin, and it was gray and it was cold. And then Keith Jackson would come on at 11 a.m. Central Time in Wisconsin there with Bob Greasy. And there it'd be Florida State. It'd be Florida State, Miami. It'd be Florida, Auburn, some big game from Florida. And it was always sunny. There were always thousands of pretty girls in the stadium. And I, again, it was so foreign to me, and it created in me this idea of Florida as a paradise and somewhere that I had to go and something that I had to be a part of. Seeing those games on television really had a deep, deep impact on me. Now, my brother ended up going to Florida State. Because of that, I went to Auburn. I didn't go to school in Florida because of that, but I went down south because of that. And, you know, I just, you know, it's hard for people to imagine who've never lived in the Midwest or lived up north how gray, how cold, how early it gets. And when you see these images of Florida on TV, you want to be a part of it.
Sure, absolutely.
And that's why so many people want to move here. Another great one, I don't know, you know, neither of us are fishermen, but do you remember that show called The Walkers K Chronicles? It was a fly fishing show on ESPN, and this ran during the 90s. Walker's Cay is the northernmost of the Bahamian Islands. It's about 100 miles from Florida. But this guy, Flip Pallet, was a fly fisherman.
I know the name.
Yeah, he'd go to the Everglades and the Keys all the time and fly fish for tarpon and stuff like that. And again, it's one of these where you see these images, and it's this guy out on the water, out on the Keys. It's always sunny. It's always gorgeous. He's having a great time. And it again reinforces this idea of Florida as this sunny, natural paradise. And those two shows for me really hit home and established in me this desire that, you know, from a very early age, I wanted to live in Florida. And, mm-hmm. you know, 2012, I made the dream come true.
Philip Pallett, by the way, is one of the characters in Lords of the Fly, the book on tarpon fishing we talked about in a different episode.
Yeah, that episode will be released mm-hmm. later on in November. A lot to look forward to there. And I don't know... if you knew this, Craig, but professional wrestling has a great history of television in Florida.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you remember Gordon Solie in championship wrestling from Florida?
Oh, yeah. Well, Dusty Rhodes and the Bionic Elbow. And let's not forget Snap Off a Slim Jim.
Yeah, yeah. Randy Savage was a lot of the guys lived in Tampa. And mm-hmm. Right now, with COVID closing down professional wrestling, All Elite Wrestling films all of its episodes in Jacksonville, here where I am at Daly's Place. For many years now, the WWE, which is the number one professional wrestling brand, has run all of its NXT tapings, its developmental league, so to speak, out of Full Sail University in Orlando. And since this summer, with COVID-19 shutting down professional wrestling, going out on the road like it's shut down concerts and sporting events, similarly with fans, all of their shows, SmackDown and Raw, the two big shows on USA and Fox Sports, have come out of the Amway Center in Orlando. And in the 1990s, World Championship Wrestling, which at that time had Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage and Sting and a lot of folks people remember, they had a studio set up at Disney World. So people could get out of the heat in Disney and come inside and catch some air conditioning and wrestling. So
did they feature my namesake, Sergeant Craig Pitbull Pittman?
He would have been in it at that time. Yeah, he would have been in it. I think it was either the Highway Patrol or the State Patrol. He was a member of a tag team. They were the guys that generally lost. I'm sorry.
That sounds like my namesake.
To report. I think another big one too. And when you think about sports, Orange Bowl, you know, a huge bowl game out of Miami that millions of people would watch for years on end, and then the Daytona 500. February up north, and you're going to watch these guys go around in circles at the beach in Florida. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are powerful images. And really, I guess you could take it to all of New Year's Day, you know, for a long time with all of the bowl games coming from Tampa, yeah. coming from Orlando, coming from Jacksonville, mm-hmm. coming from Miami. You know, those are powerful memories for a lot of people like me who are born and raised in the Midwest and have been trying to get to Florida ever since. So with that, why don't we bring on the expert and talk to Eric Deggans, who is the NPR TV critic, National Public Radio, of course. He worked with Craig at the Tampa Bay Times for many years, writing about television, entertainment, and other topics.
So, Eric, you're from up north, like Chad is. What were your earliest images of Florida from watching TV?
Oh, Miami Vice, dude. and it was crazy because, like, Miami Vice debuts. At the same time, you're getting all this journalism out of Miami about how crazy it was down there. This would have been 1989. The Miami Herald offered me an internship, and I thought very seriously about taking it. But it turns out I got offered an internship by the Pittsburgh Press, and I had relatives in that city, so I wouldn't have had to pay for a place to stay. And that's the only reason I didn't go to Miami. And I was really, part of me was really looking forward to going down to the land of Sonny Crockett. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Jordy picked out a pet alligator.
I was looking forward to hitting that beach, though.
Yeah. Well, and that show so captured that moment in time of the 80s where everything was so materialistic, so vapid, so focused on looks and wealth and money, that sort of...
Now I'm going to have to stop you here.
Okay, do that.
That was all about Michael Mann's vision of coolness mm-hmm. and cops in $1,000 suits and driving, you know, these really expensive mm-hmm. sports cars and, you know, cigarette boats, you know, mm-hmm. on the ocean. There was a huge amount of glamour and stylishness to that. And you know, all these hits that they played. I mean, you know, nowadays we're tired of these songs, but back then, You Belong in the City,
right,
and
Glenn
In
Fry.
The Air Tonight,
yeah.
And, I think they used Dirty Laundry.
Yep.
You know, that was sort of the height of coolness.
It was so stylish. That, yeah, the whole show.
Not only did it sort of set the tone for what people thought of Miami, but it set the tone for MTV and what was considered cool in music and stylish and in fashion. On one level, it may have felt superficial, but that image set a lot of trends in music and fashion.
Well,
and in television.
Yeah, the font for the TV show, that Miami Vice font, is still the go-to font when you want to do anything for the 80s. That Art Deco, you know, pink and aqua. I mean, everyone has a vision of that font, and like you say, the sport coat, the white linen sport coat over the T-shirt, and the you know, the sort of loafers with no socks. And you talked about the music and the cigar boats and the cars and the whole thing.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It was really captivated people, obviously, in sort of the way
the
like Dallas
with the pushed up
sleeves,
and it's interesting because, and I may be jumping the gun a little bit, but if you look at a show like Dexter, it was also set in Miami. I sort of felt like Dexter was kind of a reaction to Miami Vice. It was like, it was filmmakers saying, we're going to show you, like a more realistic picture of Miami. We're going to give you the real life version of that stuff that you saw in Miami Vice.
Or as realistic as a show about a serial killer of serial killers could be. Anyway.
Right. Well, you know, and of course, like, storylines are completely outlandish. But if you watch the first few episodes, especially, the pilot was filmed entirely in Miami, and a lot of the episodes in the first season were filmed around Miami. And you saw a lot of parts of that city that you never had seen before. And it just gave you a sense of what it was like to live in Miami, as opposed to the sort of idealized. I mean, you know, there's no way any cop, even if they're undercover pretending to be a drug dealer, could live the way those guys did. But a lot of people could live the way that Dexter did. And so it always felt like a more authentic vision of Miami, even though the actual storyline of the show was crazy.
Did the images you saw in Miami Vice, though, did they make you want to move to Florida? I mean, because they're showing this utterly corrupt society, full of, you know, where drugs rule, where all that counts is how much money you've got. I mean, really, kind of the only really honest guy is Lieutenant Castillo. You know,
well, bear in mind,
having a lot of fun.
I was a young journalist, so thinking about going to a city like that, where everything was crazy, there was an appeal to that, you know, because there was a sense that there'd be stories falling off the trees. There, you know, the stuff that you could sort of dip your hands into. And I was an aspiring music critic. So the idea that I could be in a city as rich as Miami in terms of culture and music, and then, you know, all the craziness that was going on, I was looking forward to experiencing that. I didn't know if that was the place that I would want to live. And in fact, you know, I never thought that Florida would be a place that I would wind up living, because I didn't know a place like the Tampa Bay area actually existed. And I feel like the Tampa Bay area, you know, I'm from Indiana. I feel like the Tampa Bay area is Florida for people from the Midwest. You know, people from Indiana and Ohio and Illinois, you know, tend to settle here because it's a little more even keeled. It's a little more laid back. But it's still like all the cool stuff about Florida, the beaches and the climate and even the, you know, the people. So, you know, when I came here to work for the Tampa Bay Times in 1995, I discovered a part of Florida that I had never seen the Tampa Bay area in media. I mean, there may have been movies and TV shows that featured the Tampa Bay area that I'm not remembering, but, you know, I didn't know anything about this place when I moved here, and I had a great time discovering it.
Yeah. Well, and that's the power of mass media, right? Is because through Miami Vice and Disney World, everyone thinks Florida is South Beach and theme parks. And those are the outliers. It's much more the areas like Tampa, St. Pete, where you and Craig are, Jacksonville, where I am, the more natural, less developed. Now, certainly a lot of development, but nothing like what the theme parks in Orlando or where South Beach is from, but those images carry the day because they're so prevalent globally.
Now other parts of Florida are starting to get their due. So Claws is set down in Manatee County. And since you mentioned Jacksonville, I have to mention there's a character on The Good Place.
Yes.
Who comes from Jacksonville,
right.
And they're constantly ragging on Jacksonville.
The dopiest guy on the show, right? A big Jaguars, Blake Bortles fan. Yeah. A very funny character, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I got to say, you know, I got a bone to pick with a lot of those shows because none of them shoot in Florida. And often they don't, as far as I know, there's nobody from Florida involved in writing them. So the vision they have of Florida, I think, is kind of weird. Like Claws, as much as I enjoyed Claws, watching that show, I always felt like I was watching this sort of schizophrenic vision of Florida. You know, like parts of it felt like, I'm blanking on the community I'm trying to remember that's over by Brandon.
Riverview?
Help me out. Yeah, yeah. Parts of it even reminded me of like Riverview or Brandon or whatever. And then parts of it reminded me of Jacksonville. And, you know, sometimes you watch these shows, especially when they're not filmed here, and the vision of Florida they present is this weird pastiche of places that the writers have kind of heard of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on Becoming a God in Central Florida, it's the funniest thing happened. So I got to interview the star of the show,
Kirsten Dunst,
and then mm-hmm. I also interviewed the showrunner. So I asked Kirsten Dunst, like, where the show was set. And she said it was set in a specific Florida town, but she didn't remember it. And then I asked the showrunner, and they were like, no, it's not set in a specific place in Florida. It's set in this, they had this imagined Florida town that was right next to Orlando. I'm thinking like a version of Kissimmee, basically. But they didn't say specifically Kissimmee. It's a fictional place that they never named. And so that often happens, you know, like these shows will create these pastiches of places. So you'll see one scene in a place that looks like Jacksonville and one scene in a place that looks like Miami and one scene in a place that looks like Orlando. And that's their vision of Florida. But if you live here, you're like, there's something in the back of your head where it just doesn't feel right when you're watching the show. And so that's why I've always, you know, had a little bone to pick with some of these shows that film in Savannah or film in New Orleans mm-hmm. or film in L.A., and they don't really capture, like I said, you know, you watch the first few episodes of Dexter and you can see this sort of unique vision of Florida that's hard to get anywhere else. Or if you watch Burn Notice, if you remember that show, that was on
oh, yeah.
Network.
That was a great show.
You know,
show.
They filmed that on location in Miami and they took over an old convention center, closed down convention center and built their standing sets inside of it. So you know, every shot was just like, you got that true sense of the blue, Florida's blue sky and Florida's wonderful beaches. And there's just something about how Florida looks that is really hard, I think, to reproduce in other places.
I'm drawing a blank on the name, but there was a TV show that was a true crime, supposed to be a true crime thing set in Florida, I want to say in the 90s. And everybody afterwards was talking about all the mountains in the background.
Exactly. Well, it's like, you know, it's like, when they do TV shows that are supposed to be set in America and they film them in Canada. You know, it was mm-hmm. like when I was watching Queer as Folk, Showtime mm-hmm. series focused on gay people in Pittsburgh. But they filmed it in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in Pittsburgh for a while, and my mother's side of the family is from Pittsburgh. And I'm watching the show, and I'm like, I don't recognize anything. It's just like Pittsburgh's such a distinctive city. You know, to set it in a town like that and then film it someplace that doesn't look anything like it is just crazy. So I really wish the state would get its act together and start handing out some tax incentives so shows that are set in Florida can actually film here and people will get a sense of what Florida is like. You know, I don't think these legislators understand how Florida's image is affected by them creating a situation where filmmakers aren't encouraged to film here. They're doubling, you know, Georgia for Florida, and it's making the state look worse.
Georgia has gone all chips to the middle on that filming tax credit, and from Stranger Things to you name Ozark is filmed in Georgia. There are so many TV programs filmed in Georgia. It has been a real boon to the state there. and there's no reason, obviously, Florida couldn't do the same thing. So explain how that tax credit situation works and why someone who's doing something like Ozark, and this is supposed to be in the Ozarks of Arkansas and Missouri, would go to Georgia and do it instead of the actual place or Los Angeles or somewhere else.
It's actually not as easy as a situation to set up as you might think. Georgia has had tax credits, significant tax credits, for film and TV shows that film in their state for a very long time. It essentially hands back 30% of a production's budget to them. So if your budget is $1 million and you film it in Georgia, all the tax credits basically hand you, another $300,000 to your budget. So it's a way to you realize if you film in certain places, it's almost like expanding your budget, sure, because you get so much tax credit. Now, Atlanta has been doing it for so long that there is an entire infrastructure that's grown up inside the state to make it easier. So there's tons of sound stages. Tyler Perry bought a 330-acre chunk of an old military base, and he built 12 sound stages on there. Plus, he has other buildings. Like this is amazing. He built a mansion, okay, a two-story mansion. And on one side of it, it's a modern-looking face with the driveway and landscaping and everything. You walk around to the east side of the building, and it's, an old-school mansion like something out of the Munsters with landscaping and a driveway. Then you walk around to behind, and it's a totally different style. There's four different architectural styles, and it's set up so that all they have to do is move the camera to a different side of the building, and you walk inside the building, and it's styled that way till you get to the middle of it, and then it flips, and it's, wow, and it's the other side. I've never seen anything like it. He saw a diner that he loved in South Georgia. He had it moved brick by brick to this estate, and I swear to God, if they wanted to, they could open it up as a business. It's filled with food. It's totally set, and whenever they want to film there, you just roll in the lights and you just go. Florida never had that, and that was the problem. Even when Florida had tax incentives, when productions would want to come to Florida, it was hard for them to find sound stages. So if you're Burn Notice, there's a certain number of sets that you have to have access to. You have to create the lead character, Michaels. You have to create his home. You have to create a set that looks like his home. He was always dealing with his mother. So he had to create a set that's like her house. He had a friend who would help him out all the time. So he had to create a set that was like his. I think he was on a boat all the time, so they had to find a boat or something. But, you have standing sets that you have to have all the time. And then you also have to create sets that you would build up and tear down. So, if there's a scene where Michael's meeting with somebody in their house, well, they have to build that set and create that. And Miami just didn't have a lot of studio space where the sound stages were big enough to accommodate a modern TV production. So they took over this abandoned convention center in the downtown Miami, and it was crumbling. The facilities were crumbling. It was actually like a depressing place to film. I visited the set one time, and they had these standing sets kind of in the middle of the convention center, but the whole convention center was like falling apart.
It was one piece away from being rubble.
I don't blame filmmakers for saying Florida is too much hassle. We don't get our money back, and they don't have the sound stages. Pinewood Studios in Britain does all the James Bond movies. They decided to build a $100 million facility in Atlanta for the Marvel movies. There is a Home Depot right next to the facility that is basically the Home Depot for that studio. So whenever they need lumber, whenever they need materials, they just go to the Home Depot, and the Home Depot already knows how to take care of what they want. Florida doesn't have anything like that. So you have to not only provide incentives, you have to provide incentives for a long enough time that you get that infrastructure built up so that the Home Depots and the Lowe's know how to take care of production so that people who do makeup and lighting and stuff will buy homes in the area and be available to be a part of your crew. You don't have to fly everybody in from L.A. Atlanta has that because they've been doing it for like 25, 30 years. Anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Craig.
Well, and I was just going to say that Florida used to have a facility like that, Ivan Tor Studio, back in the 60s. Yep. They produced Gentle Ben and Flipper, and I think they produced some of the Miami Vice stuff in the 80s
as
well.
Yeah. I think that facility still exists. I think the problem was that it wasn't big enough. But I'm talking out of turn. I'm not sure why.
I think they were more oriented towards outdoors stuff, you know,
yeah,
outdoors
and
animals.
Yeah, I'm not sure, for example, why you know, Bird Notice didn't go there, or the Glades. I don't know if you remember that show that was on A&E.
Oh yeah,
I don't know why they didn't go there. But I don't think they used that. I don't think either show used that studio.
We have gone too far without getting in depth to the other giant '80s Florida TV show, which of course you know I'm going to mention, Golden Girls. And what do you think was the cultural impact on Florida again of reinforcing this as God's waiting room through Golden Girls?
Why, you know, I wouldn't hang that on any one TV show. I mean, Golden Girls, of course, you know, they're all retirees that are supposedly living in Florida. But again, it was filmed on a soundstage, I think, in L.A. But not only did you have Golden Girls, after that, you had Seinfeld and his parents.
Sure.
Who lived in Boca.
Oh, yeah.
Del Boca Vista.
And so you had a ton of episodes where Jerry's going down to Boca, or his parents are visiting him from Boca. And so there's always that reference to Florida being the place where you go when it's time to retire. Seinfeld used to have a joke, you know, my parents live in Florida because, you know, they're 65 and it's the law.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of shows that have kind of played off of that idea of retirees. But what's interesting is once you start to think about it, there's actually quite a few shows that have been set in Florida or even have filmed in Florida that we don't necessarily think of as Florida shows. For example, you know, I Dream of Jeannie. Now, if there's another show that gave me as a kid sort of the vision of Florida as like a cool place where cool stuff happens, believe it or not, it was I Dream of Jeannie, because the lead character was an astronaut who lived in Cocoa Beach. And so I always had this vision of Cocoa Beach as this cool place just because, you know, Jeannie and, you know, her master lived there.
Yeah, Tony.
Mm-hmm. There are shows like that that were ostensibly set in Florida that we don't think of as Florida shows, but may have shaped, you know, people's ideas of what Florida was just because they were constantly Florida references inside of them.
Do you think TV producers, and I'm thinking here of Claus again, I guess, that they use the term Florida now as sort of a shorthand for the viewers of expect wacky things to happen here?
Yeah, yeah, I definitely think so. Especially like in today's TV parlance, Florida is a place where eccentric people exist and kind of do their crazy eccentric stuff because,
so
you know, it's
exactly,
because it's in the water or something, you know. And, you know, when you think about like Florida Girls, for example, which was, you know, written by somebody Clearwater, you know, that's that comedy that was on Pop TV. That's a comedy that was on Pop TV about four sort of 20-something girls who were friends and party buddies and wanted something more out of life. One of them in particular, you know, wanted something more out of life. And it was created by a woman who grew up in Clearwater. And so at least the references and the vision of Florida was pretty authentic, even though that was another show that I think they filmed in Savannah and didn't film here. But, you know, Florida is the shorthand for, you know, eccentric, party-hardy people who hang out on the beach all day and, you know, try to figure out ways to avoid working.
Craig, were you, this is a little before my time, and maybe before your time as well, but do you recall Sea Hunt at all? That was one of my mom's favorite shows.
No, I grew up watching Gentle Ben and Flipper, though. And let me mention another Miami Beach show, the Jackie Gleason Show, filmed live in Miami Beach. Yeah,
I actually remember Sea Hunt because Sea Hunt was in reruns, and I was a big Lloyd Bridges fan when I was a kid. So I would watch, just like I would watch Gilligan's Island, you know, in reruns, or I might even watch McHale's Navy when I was a kid. I was, you know, again, I was pop culture nerdy back then. I would watch Sea Hunt just because I thought Lloyd Bridges was so cool. But I was so young, I did not realize that was set in Florida when I was watching it.
Now, let's talk about a somewhat different Florida set show, David Makes Man, on the OWN Network.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us about that.
So David Makes Man is a really complex drama that's on the Oprah Winfrey Network that got a little more exposure because it's now available on streaming via HBO Max. But it's basically the story of this young kid who's in high school. He's African-American, and he's with his younger brother and his mother, and they live in a housing project. And he's got a scholarship to go to a private school that's better than the public schools. And so he's your prototypical African-American kid who's poised to do great things if he can stay out of trouble and keep his family together. It's a coming-of-age story that's about the unique pressures that Black teen males face in high school, particularly if they're good at school and they seem like they might have options outside of their neighborhood if they can get out of high school and get into college. And so his goal is to get through his high school with good grades, keep his younger brother out of trouble because his younger brother's a knucklehead who seems hell-bent on becoming some kind of gangster kid, and keeping his mom together. And his mom is struggling to hold on to jobs, you know, for her own reasons. And so it's very much about like all the pressures that he's facing. And it's set in Miami. This is a much different look at Florida than we've seen before. If you've seen the film Moonlight, then you've seen it, because the lead character in Moonlight was also in a similar neighborhood. And the show was created by the guy who wrote the play that Moonlight, the film, is based on.
Terrell Alvin McCrane.
Yeah, so it's all kind of the same. It's dealing with a lot of the same concepts and a lot of the same pressures, and it's set in kind of the same environment. And so what I like about it, not only do I like the fact that it's a complex drama about all the pressures that young Black men are facing these days, it shows you a side of Miami focused on Black folks, not Latino culture, focused on poor people, focused on poor high schoolers. If you were to meet, you know, like Trayvon Martin could have been this character's friend. He could have lived near him. So these are the types of kids that we see surfacing in news stories all the time, but we don't see TV shows focused on them. So that's why I really love David Makes Man.
What image do you think it gives of Florida?
I think they're really meticulous about portraying the heat, number one, and how the heat impacts things. You know, David every day has to get up. He has to get his younger brother dressed. They walk to a bus stop, and he takes the bus to drop his brother off at school, and then he gets on another bus to go to his school. You know, it's like, you know, when he comes back, he's like dressed in sweat. You know, they're walking everywhere in the Florida, and not just the Florida heat, the Miami heat. I mean, this is the hottest part of a hot state. And so they do a great job of constantly reminding you of how hot it is and how that can impact how people act. And then also, because David lives in a housing project, you get to see the codes of behavior within that housing project. There seems to be a gang of youngsters who kind of control that housing project, and they're constantly pressuring David to help them with their various businesses. You know, in a weird twist, the young man who controls that gang, his father was David's kind of mentor, and that guy got killed. And so there's a weird sort of bond, yet also sibling rivalry between David and the kid who runs this housing project. So you get a real vision of what it's like to live in a complex like that. Again, you know, you're not going to see that in Miami Vice or Dexter or anything like that. You know, this is a vision of a side of Florida that you rarely see. The only thing I can think of that comes close that I've seen recently is that Starz did a docuseries about the football league that the guy from Two Live Crew, Luther Campbell, established in Liberty City. And it's a renowned football program. It's produced lots of athletes who play in the NFL now. And it's, you know, hard to imagine that this guy who was considered one of the most pornographic rappers of his day has also started this youth program, this youth football league that's been around for like 25 years, I think. But they did
he's a beloved figure in Miami now, Uncle Lucas.
Yeah.
He is. He was a beloved figure back then, even. But yeah, he definitely is now. And people sort of have a lot of respect for the fact that he used his money to reinvest in the community and create these mm-hmm. programs. And, you know, now they've gone beyond football. You know, they're helping people find jobs, and they're helping people get food if they're hungry and need assistance. There's all kinds of social programs connected to the Football League, but the Football League was the beginning of it. And there's a whole docuseries about it on Stars. And so that gives you another look. You know, they hang out in the housing projects where these kids are growing up, and you get a real sense of a different side of Miami than you might see in a show like even like Bloodline, which was on Netflix, which was kind of an authentic vision of Florida, but, you know, was not set.
Well, it was a crime show in the Keys, right?
Yeah, crime show in the Keys, yeah.
Before we run out of time, I want to make sure to ask you about reality shows in Florida, in particular, Siesta Key, Florabama Shore, and Tiger King.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and I don't think it's fair to put those three together because I think Florabama Shore and Siesta Key are your typical exploitive. Can we curse on this podcast? Or
sure.
Go right ahead.
Typical exploitive bullshit reality TV shows. And you know, you asked about, you know, Florida being used as a convenient punchline. I think those shows do that. You know, it's basically Jersey Shore set in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But Tiger King is something different. The filmmakers who made Tiger King realized that there was this whole eccentric, crazy-ass subculture
mm-hmm.
that involved these guys who had created these facilities where they were taking in exotic animals. And each one of them had these sort of bizarre ecosystem of followers and helpers that, you know, involved all kinds of, you know, involved addiction, involved brainwashing people. It's just all kinds of crazy stuff. So
possible homicide, so,
you
know, yeah.
Possible homicide. And in Florida, of course, you know, we got Carol Baskin and her Big Cat Rescue, which is, you know, right next to Citrus Park Mall in our area. And, you know, all the allegations that, you know, her husband vanished and what happened to him. And she's created this network of volunteers and sort of acolytes who all volunteer to help maintain this facility. And there's all these allegations, of course, that she's doing what some of these other places are doing, which is finding a way to own and maintain exotic animals by acting like she's a rescue facility. They also detailed, I don't know, was he a former drug dealer or a current drug dealer, whatever, somebody connected to the drug trade near Miami who also had this huge facility with exotic animals. He's the guy who supposedly Al Pacino's character Scarface was based on. Filmmakers had footage of him and his facility, and supposedly he had been in contact with Joe Exotic and had kind of helped inspire him. And then there's that Doc Antilli guy who was also more directly Joe Exotic's mentor. Antilli supposedly created this whole sort of cult of personality where he was getting young women to come in and live in his compound and help take care of his animals. So these filmmakers realized there was this whole wily, arching, bizarre subculture mm-hmm. created by these people who are on the fringes of society. And they spent something like 5 years documenting. And, you know, you can question whether or not what they ended up creating, whether it was exploitive or not. But as a media critic, when I watched it, I saw filmmakers who had spent so much time with these people that they got so many things on tape. I could not believe what they got on tape because they spent so much time with these people. And so Florabama Shore and Siesta Key, they're sort of bullshit manufactured reality shows. I think Tiger King was much more about finding a subculture and just hanging out and turning on the camera and just filming until they picked up footage that was just, there was a helper at Joe Exotic's facility who got attacked by an animal and had her arm ripped off. And they had footage of Joe Exotic trying to help her right after it happened. That just kind of blew my mind that they had that kind of stuff. So that's very different than those other two shows, which are kind of part of the MTV formula. And most of what those people are shown doing is completely concocted and manufactured by the producers and then filmed and turned into some, you know, nonsense.
But all three are sort of like a soap opera. I mean, I guess that to me is the connection, is that they're sort of soap opera-ish in their elements as far as the people's behavior and the hooking up and the mayhem that follows and so forth.
There is a sort of superficial resemblance in the you might be attracted to each of those shows because you're watching people behave badly, But in Tiger King, you at least I had the sense we were watching filmmakers kind of dig into a really dysfunctional and eccentric subculture that a lot of people didn't even know existed, as opposed to producers creating a fake reality and having people act badly because they want to be on TV and then pretending that that actually happened. Those are two very different things.
Do you think they'll function as good ads for Florida? Will people want to move here?
I think
like
they
you
are,
do with Miami
I
Vice.
Think they are illustrative. I think they are illustrative of a saying I always say when people ask me why is there so much crazy stuff going on in Florida. I say shit rolls downhill is what I say.
Welcome to Florida.
So it's not like the tourism board is, you know, it's not like Visit Florida is going to be taking clips from Tiger King and putting them on their clip reel anytime soon. It's weird. I have no doubt that there are some people who are going to watch Tiger King and decide to visit Big Cat Rescue out of some morbid sense of curiosity.
Oh, sure.
And I have no doubt that there are some people who will wind up volunteering out there because Tiger King made them aware of the place's existence. And, you know, they wind up going out there and for whatever reason, deciding they want to fall in with Carol Baskin. The one thing that all of the people who run those facilities seem to have in common is that they are charismatic people with an ability to develop sort of cadres of followers who would support them.
Yeah.
Joe Exotic, Carol Baskin, Doc Antilli, and the guy in Miami, they all seem to have that in common. So I wouldn't be surprised if some people who are curious about Big Cat Rescue and go visit it because of Tiger King, I wouldn't be surprised if some of them wind up hanging out there and volunteering with her because they wind up believing in her mission.
Episode 7 of this podcast was all about wildlife rehabbers in Florida. Anyone listening who wants to dive more deeply into that subject, just go back into the archives. Episode 7. Eric, this has been great. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for
fun.
Your time.
Thanks
so much for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
One question before we go, Craig, and this is a big TV question. This is a big debate in my household. TV in the bedroom or no TV in the bedroom?
We have a TV in the bedroom, but we don't use it much at night.
My wife has to fall asleep to the TV.
There's just not that much to watch on TV at night anymore.
Yeah.
You know, unless you like Friends reruns or.
And I do. Yeah. My wife has to fall asleep watching TV. I can't stand it. So that is, we don't argue about it. We have come to the conclusion that we typically watch, what we watch at night is Rick Steves' European travels because it's so sleep inducing. We love it.
He's got a great radio show, though. I don't know if you ever heard that.
I have heard it. And we pop that on YouTube, and that's what we typically fall asleep to every night there on the television. With as much as you read, I can't imagine you watch a whole lot of TV.
You know, the shows I watch are Bob's Burgers and Schitt's Creek. That's about it these days. And of course, when the Rays were on the World Series, I watched that.
Sure. We tried a couple episodes of Schitt's Creek and just couldn't get into it for whatever reason. People rave about it, and you're obviously one of them. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I've been a Catherine O'Hara fan since she was on SCTV. Anyway,
gotcha.
That's all off
right.
The topic.
Welcome to Florida.